Blog Talk Radio.
The Initiative Radio Network proudly presents the Aunt Canary Experience, hosted by Brother Anthony.
Hello, hello, hello. Happy 4th of July to some people. This is, we're live. Even though today was a holiday for, 99.9% of everybody, I had to go to work this morning, which is all good. I had to work this morning, came home, and this show is live tonight. So even though I could have taken a break, I was like, man, I ain't taking a break because I want to do the show tonight. Like I said, this is live, July 4, 2017, 8 o'clock on the East Coast. And hopefully somebody's out there listening because I know it's a holiday. People probably went out of town over the weekend, probably coming back in to go to work tomorrow. I got barbecues all over the place, fireworks. It's not raining. They kept calling for rain today, but it's not raining, and I'm quite sure they're going to be able to get the fireworks done downtown. I'll probably be hearing from here. I'm not that far from downtown, but you may hear some booms in the background, but it's all good. But for those that are listening, thank you for listening. Chat room is open if you want to call in. 914-803-4571. 914-803-4571. Like I said, even though it is a holiday, I did want to do the show live, and I am live. I'm speaking to you from capital city of North Kakilaki. So after today, the next official holiday is Labor Day, but I digress. The next official holiday is my birthday in August, and if you want to take the day off and do nothing, hey, I'm down, because that's what I plan on doing. I'm going to take that week off, and I'm going to do something like I always do on my birthday because I think I deserve it. But today is 4th of July. Title of today's show is Was America Ever Great? Because like with every other 4th of July, you get, you know, flag singing, you know, patriots come out of the woodwork, blah, blah, blah. You know the deal. But I thought that tonight would be a great a great time to talk about, was America ever great? Because a lot of people seem to think that we're the greatest thing, greatest country ever put on planet Earth. You know, you might get an argument, you know, from some people. I mean, I guess I've never been out of the United States for any reason at all. I've been different parts of this country, but I've never been out. So some people may have a different perspective than I do. If you want to call in 914-803-4571, and we'll talk about it. Was America ever great? And I think it was great for some people. It wasn't great for everybody. But we're going to get into that tonight in just a second. Like I said, the chat room is open. We've got our weekly Trump diss, well, as usual. And then at the end of the show, we may go over, depending on how the phone calls go and everything else goes, I am going to play the entire speech from Frederick Douglass entitled Meaning of 4th of July for the Negro. So I'm going to play that entire speech. So we may go over, but if we do, it's all good. Hopefully they won't cut us off. And I hope the clips that I have for you will play tonight, because last week we were having some technical issues. I don't know if there were some people that didn't want to get the message out, didn't want to hear what I had to say, but we'll see. Hopefully I'll be able to play all the clips tonight. I've got some pretty good clips I want to play, so that's the topic for tonight. Was America ever great? According to Trump and his supporters, you know, when you try to nail them down to what does that mean, that is code for something. They know what it's code for. But we're going to talk about that and get your opinion on that, see what you think about it. But, you know, like I said, the question is kind of open-ended, because it may mean different things to different people. But, you know, it is a question, and people ask it, and it's like, you know, they keep running around talking about make America great again, but when was America great? So we're going to talk about that. Like we always do, I'm going to play our commercial, and then we're going to get right into this topic. Like I said, the chat room is open. If you want to get in and give us a call or whatever, like I said, I understand that a lot of people may be traveling or doing different things because it is a holiday, which is all good. I understand that. Like I said, the show will go on. And if you're not able to listen to it live, you can always go back and listen to it in the archives, which is always just great also. So we're going to go ahead and do the commercial. Then we're going to be right back, and then we're going to get into this topic. Topic for tonight is, was America ever great? Play the commercial. Be right back.
Hey, you, human being. Yeah, you. Did you realize we were made from the earth, the actual soil? You couldn't have realized that, because if you would realize that, you wouldn't be putting chemicals on your skin, because it's like putting chemicals in a plant. What do you put on a plant? Water, some sunlight, and sometimes plant food, depending on how stubborn the plant is. Same thing with our skin, same thing with our hair. So check out my products, Shamika Body Hair and Face Butter Treats, on Facebook, and view the price list, the product list, the pictures, and place your order on my email at shamikarobinson1@outlook.com. Stop using chemicals. There is no such thing as eczema and all these ridiculous skin diseases that they're naming. It's called your body is responding to chemicals. So stop letting your body respond to chemicals and get nature involved with natural shea butters and cocoa butters and oils. Again, you were made from the earth. So stop fighting against your nature.
Okay. So let me give out the calling number in case you want to call in. 914-803-4571. 914-803-4571. And the question of tonight is, was America ever great? We're going to answer that question in just a second. Before we do, we are going to play this week's Trump this. This guy, and he's the one that came up with this slogan, which is one of those dog whistle phrases that means something to him and his crew, and we all know it means it's code. It's kind of like one of those, he says, make America great again. They all know what they're talking about. It's kind of like in the same thing as, segregation now, George Wallace said back in, seems like, every candidate has his own little catchphrase. So we're going to jump into that in just a second. But we're going to do this Trump diss. And this guy is coming off the rails like every day, every week. He made some corny video. Somebody made some corny video of him attacking CNN symbol or whatever it is. But what it really was, it was from his appearance at a WrestleMania a few years ago. You have to remember, this guy is he's a reality show person. His ego is probably big, is probably as big as the entire country itself. He likes to showboat. He likes to do all that kind of corny crap. And it's a video of him attacking Vince McMahon, who is the owner of the WWE, which is a sports entertainment. I'm not going to call it wrestling, even though I am a wrestling. I grew up watching wrestling back in the day. I grew up watching wrestling, not sports entertainment. So that clip that he got that from was from I think it's 2007, I think I read somewhere, him attacking the CNN logo, and he got a kick out of it, and all his uneducated followers seemed to get a kick out of it also. But what you need to remember is that the technique for most dictators is, as far as the press code, is that they want everybody to believe them and not the press. So what they're trying to do, they're trying to turn the people against the press. So whenever you have a local news or national news or whatever it is, what he's trying to do, he's trying to get his followers and people that like him to turn on the media. So when the media says, you know, if they're out there reporting something that he's doing or he said or whatever, he doesn't want you to believe the media. He wants you to believe him. So he'll come out and he'll do something stupid and it gets reported, and then he'll come out, no, 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 that's not what happened. You know, you got to believe me, you got to believe me. And that's the first step. So he's trying to turn the people against the media. And what you need to do, you need not to fall for it. Because it's a trick. It's what all dictators do. And, you know, and then what he does is he has Fox Noise as his own personal network, whatever you want to call it. So that's his game. Excuse me. That's his game. That's the game he's playing, that he wants people to turn against the media, what he calls false news or whatever he wants to call it. And he wants you to believe only him. Well, I wouldn't believe him as far as I could throw him. I don't believe a word he says. He lies every time he opens his mouth. So I'm not one of those people that fall for what he says. I have a brain and I like to use it every now and again. I like to research things that happen in the news, and I suggest you do the same. Just don't fall for the okie doke. That's what he's trying to do. But see, I think the difference is, he might have been able to get away with that years ago, but now he can't get away with that because technology. Every time he says something, people research it, or at least I do, and people aren't falling for it. Well, that's what I tell people all the time. You know, you walk around with a computer in your pocket, research stuff. You know, just don't listen to what he's talking about. And now all of a sudden, you know, I kind of glanced at an article today that seems like the numbers, the unemployment numbers are going down. Before, you know, when he was campaigning, you know, he claimed that President Obama was making the numbers up. Now all of a sudden he wants to take credit for it. So I'm telling this guy, you got to watch this clown because he will pull the okie doke on you, so you got to watch him. So this clip is talking about he's still going to war against the press. Like I said, he's doing this on purpose because he wants people to believe only him. He doesn't want you to believe the truth. So you got people out there doing their job, reporting the news like they should, and he's trying to, you know, turn people against him.
Excuse me. I'm getting sleepy all the time.
A long day. It's all good. So I'm going to play this clip and be right back. And I apologize for the yawning, so ignore the yawn. But, you know, just listen to this, and then we'll be right back, and we're going to get into topic for tonight. Was America ever great? Be right back.
Earlier this week, Donald Trump held his technically very first re-election fundraiser for 2020 at one of his D.C. hotels, where attendees were charged $35,000 a piece to attend. Well, during this fundraiser, Donald Trump got up there, made a little speech where he started once again attacking the media, this time specifically going after CNN for the fact that they recently had to retract, apologize, and fire a couple writers for publishing a story that turned out to not be 100% verifiable. And I think that's an important distinction to make here, is that the story wasn't able to be verified, so they retracted it. They issued an apology. They took the right steps. Trump won't let it go. And so during this fundraiser, he escalated his attacks on the network and joked about, maybe we should sue them. Any lawyers in the audience? I think I've got a case. It would be fun. Those were the words that Donald Trump used. It would be fun. I think I've got a case. Well, let me explain something to you, Donald Trump, about how American defamation, slander, and libel laws work. They can go both ways. Making an untrue statement about a brand or a corporation is considered defamation in the United States, and people are able to sue over that. So, just to throw this out there, say I were to refer to a network like CNN and call them fake news. Tell millions of people that they are fake news. That is an example of defamation. That is an example of something that can get you sued. That is an example of something that you do on a weekly basis. So you know what, Trump? Go ahead. go ahead with your lawsuit and sue CNN for having to retract a story and apologize and take all of the necessary steps to make it right again. Because I can promise you, before you turn around, you're going to be slapped with a countersuit for continuously referring to this legitimate news source as fake news. There is a case there, and it's a case that even a first-year lawyer could probably prove in front of a federal court. You have a big enough audience via Twitter and all your social media outlets where you call them a fake news outlet that they could prove defamation and slander without a doubt. And that's my message for Republicans right now. You better watch out, okay? When you start picking fights with media outlets, you know, those things whose job it is every day to go out and uncover things and report on things 24 hours a day, you better make sure you have no skeletons in your closets. You better make sure you've never said anything that can come back to bite you, because I can promise you, even with as horrible as the U.S. media has become, they still have some good reporters out there who will dig that up and use it against you. It is never wise to pick a fight with a media outlet. You know, there's an old saying, you don't pick a fight with somebody who buys ink by the barrel. But that's exactly what Donald Trump is doing. He thinks that attacking the media is a winning strategy. And the Republicans, to be honest, have admitted that that's going to be their tactic for the 2018 elections. The only problem is that the public doesn't share their hatred of the media, at least not to the same extent. The public as a whole does not believe that CNN is fake news. They believe that CNN screwed up, as every single media outlet has done in their history. But they also understand that Donald Trump is probably the kind of guy who eventually these stories are going to prove to be true, possibly. And that's why they're putting more stock into the corporate media at this point than they are into Donald Trump. So go ahead with your lawsuit if you think you've got a case, because I would love to see the countersuit immediately filed by CNN. If you like this video, make sure that you like.
So, like I said, the tactic, the thing that they're trying to do, they're trying to get the people to turn against the media, and then all of a sudden, fake news, you know, only listen to me, only listen to Fox Noise. I call it noise because it's not news. But see, people aren't falling for that, because people are a little bit smarter than what he gives them credit for. So, and this week he's got a meeting overseas, and we're going to see, once again, him do something dumb and make the rest of us look stupid, because he's pretty good at doing that. So, but we'll see. Maybe I'll play a little clip of that on next week's show. But that's this week's Trump Diss. And now we're going to get into the topic of tonight's program, which is, was America ever great? Call in number 914-803-4571, 914-803-4571. But before I play the clips, I want to read, let's see if I can find it, I want to read this. There's a little column I found. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I just want to read you bits and pieces of it, but it's entitled, When Was the Last Time America Was Great According to Trump's Make America Great Again slogan? And what this is basically saying is that it depends on some of this. It depends on who you ask. I mean, if you ask me, I was born in the 60s, so I guess you could say probably the 80s was probably a good time for me, because I grew up in the 80s. But it just depends on, you know, who you ask. But here's what Trump, when he was asked that question, here's what he said. He said, if you look back, there was a period of time when we were developing at the turn of the century, which was a pretty wild time for this country, and pretty wild in terms of building that machine. That machine was really based on entrepreneurship. He also pointed to the late 40s and 50s, a time when he said we were not pushed around, we were respected by everybody, we had just won a war, we were pretty much doing what we had to do. So, late 40s and 50s. So what was going on in the late 40s and 50s? Yeah, we just won a war, but if you remember some of the stories I did back in the day about, you know, what happened to our black veterans when they came back from World War II, how they were treated when they came back. You still had Jim Crow laws running around. You still had segregation. You still had all kinds of stuff. It was great for white folk, you know, middle-class white people. And they, you know, when the troops came back for them, you know, they came back, they were right, you know, middle class. They were able to use the GI Bill to go back to school to get decent jobs, get decent housing, you know, use all the programs that were there for them. But, you know, black veterans, when they came back, they couldn't get into the same programs. They couldn't do the same things, you know. So, you know, it was great for some people. It wasn't great for everybody. Well, my thing is, when was it great? Was it great when the Europeans came over, stole the land from the Native Americans, pretty much killed them for the land? They didn't kill them with diseases. They killed them with guns. Was it great whenever when they did come over here, they decided they were too lazy to build the land, so somebody got the bright idea of going to Africa, stealing hundreds of thousands of people, bringing them over here, treating them like property, making them build a country from the ground up, beating them, raping them, killing them, doing whatever they wanted to because they thought that they had some God-given right to do so. Was it great when the country was torn apart because you had, at that time, half the country wanted slaves, wanted to treat people as property, the other half not so much, so you had a war. The war was won by the North. You used to have people down here in the South that can't get over it. But they want black people to get over slavery, but they don't. They can't get over that war. You know, they for whatever reason, you know, they have to drive around here, fly them dumbass flags, and want you to remember that war, but they want you to forget everything else. Was it great when Andrew Jackson did a story on him a couple of weeks ago? The Trail of Tears, when it pushed Native Americans from the East Coast, pushed them out west to Oklahoma. A lot of them died in the process, uprooted them from their land, stole their land, forcibly moved them out west because, again, they seemed to have this bright idea that God told them that they could do it, and they did it anyway. Was it great whenever like I said, the Civil War was over. Former slaves had nowhere to go. Jim Crow laws, segregation, whatever you could think of happened to our ancestors. Was it fair? No. Was it great for them? No. It was great for the slave owners or the ex-slave owners because they still had property, they still had jobs, they still had land, they still had what they had. But, you know, black people didn't have pretty much anything. They had to start an explosion there. I guess the fireworks are starting. I don't know if you can hear them or not. I just heard one. So, you know, was this country ever great? And I guess it depends on who you ask. But when you have people running around thinking that this is the greatest country, you know, and again, something that bugs me, and it bugs me, you know, and it bugs the hell out of me. What in the hell does God bless America mean? You know, if you're wanting people to, you know, think that, you know, there was a creator that created everything, you know, everything on this planet, everything in this country, all, you know, stars, other planets, whatever. So if God created the United States, he also created Iran, Iraq, Switzerland, Finland, Iceland, Australia, South America, Ireland, you know, whatever country. So if the creator created all these other countries, what makes us so special? that we're the only ones to be blessed. You know, I kind of get really fed up with that because, you know, people, oh, God bless America. Well, what about every other country that's out there? You know, what makes us so damn special that we are the only ones to be blessed, even though the Creator created everything on the planet Earth? You know, and I think that's part of the problem right there. We think we're so better than everybody else. We're no better than everybody else. We put our pants on one leg at a time like everybody else. We put our shoes on one shoe at a time like everybody else. But what makes us so special? You know, I think a lot of the strife that goes on in this world is because you have Americans thinking that they can just push people around and do whatever the hell they want to do because they're American. Nah, that stuff don't fly. We're not greater than everybody else. We're no better than everybody else. You know, I think a lot of people like to sit and treat this like fans of a football team. You know, my team is better than your team. And people do the same thing with religion. You know, my religion is better than your religion, but you're worshiping the same God. You're only doing it in a different way. So how can your religion be better than somebody else's religion? Same thing with this country stuff. How can America be greater than everybody else because you think it is? It's no greater than it. I mean, if that's the case, we'd be winning every single Olympics. We'd be winning all the Olympic Games. I mean, it'd probably be to the point where we shouldn't even have the Olympics anymore because America's winning all the medals. You know, we're no better than anybody else. But we had this attitude to seem to think we are when we're not. But yeah, I mean, so that slogan doesn't mean anything. It's just one of those things where it's kind of like, you know, people say it's a dog whistle. You know, you blow a dog whistle, the ears on the dog goes up, so the dog hears something. And I think this is the same thing here. It's just code, the code word. It's a code phrase. Because America is not, I mean, like I said, I've never been out of this country before. You know, I like this country. But the more digging I do in its history, sometimes the more I don't like about this country. And, you know, this 4th of July is like, you know, like I said, I had to go to work today. You know, I wasn't in some patriotic spirit. I mean, because you know, I guess when you research, you dig more, you know, you find out more about what this country's about, it's like, But I will say I do miss back in the day when I was younger, you know, our family would get together on the 4th of July. And we'd have family coming in from all over the place. We'd have the big cookouts, the fireworks, you know, the older folks would play spades. You know, they played cards, and the kids would be out playing games and listening to music and dancing and having a good time. I do miss those times. Those were fun. Traveling, you know, seeing relatives you hadn't seen in a long time, meeting relatives that you didn't even know you had. You know, and I will say I do miss those times. You know, as far as, you know, running around here trying pretending to be super patriot and all that kind of stuff, like, no. So today just felt like a regular day to me. You know, other people probably feel different, but that, I mean, that's cool. So, you know, you may have felt a different way, which is all good. So, this clip that I'm going to play is entitled, entitled the show, Was America Ever Great? And it's the title of the show tonight. And this young brother gives out a lot of examples of, you know, answering the question, was America great, ever great? You know, some people think so, some people don't. So let's play this clip. Be right back.
What's good? My name is Charity Croft. There's been a phrase floating around the country lately, and it got me to thinking. Which part of American history are we referring to? So let's take a trip in the American time machine and find out. It all started in 1607 when we first landed our ship in what would soon become the colony of Virginia. It's kind of funny that we're so hard on illegal immigrants these days, considering the fact that the founding fathers of our country were illegal immigrants. And I know what you're thinking.
The founding fathers can't be considered illegal immigrants because there was no government in place when the settlers got here.
False. There are at least 566 federally recognized Native American nations that all existed in America prior to the European settlers and all had their own government, sovereignty, and highly developed societies. But we decided that we'd prefer to call them barbaric savages, so we thereby spent the next 150 years murdering the entire Native American population of the East Coast in order to create the 13 colonies. Oh yeah, and I know I keep using the word we, but I probably shouldn't use that, because if you haven't noticed, I'm black. So at the time, there would have been no we. I would have been considered property, livestock, and animal. Something that was either stolen from Africa or from right here in America and then sold into slavery. And yes, I did say from right here in America. I know you've been taught that black people's first time in America was walking off of a slave ship, but that is also false. There's countless evidence to show the fact that blacks were present in America thousands of years before Europeans, but that's a whole nother video. So fast forward, now it's 1776 and we're officially a country! But no, the entire East Coast wasn't good enough. Our forefathers came up with this psychotic, egomaniacal concept called manifest destiny. It basically said that we believe that it is our God-given right to shine from sea to shining sea. So what do you do when you need more space in a new country? Kill more natives, of course! So in 1830, Congress passed the Indian Removal Act. It basically said, hey guys, I know you've been living here for thousands of years, but we need you to move west of the Mississippi River, and if not, we can legally kill you. So yeah, we did that, and now we've conquered way more land, but guess what? We need more space! So what's left? Mexico. It's funny how we're having all this talk about keeping our border safe, build a wall, but did you know that this entire Mexican-American border that you're trying to build a wall on was actually Mexico until we stole it? This is how America looked prior to 1845. But then we waged the Mexican-American War and we slaughtered so many Mexicans that they had to give us their land so we would stop murdering them. California, Texas, Nevada, Utah, New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado, and Wyoming were all Mexico until we murdered so many people that they had to give us all that to make us stop. So yeah, fast forward to 1863 and something great finally did happen. The slaves were set free. Yay, I'm finally human. But nah though, because at the same time the Jim Crow laws of the South started. Those lasted for the next 100 years and basically said that if you were black and a white person didn't like you, then they could beat you, burn you, kill you, hang you, and there would be no consequences at all. So yeah, so much for freedom. And it wasn't even just about race at this time. Life sucked for white women too. They were basically walking, talking sex toys and cooks. Women couldn't vote, couldn't hold political office, were really only valuable as maids or baby makers, and also could get beaten and raped without getting any justice at all. So yeah, fast forward to the civil rights era of the 1960s, and blacks are now getting hosed down and attacked by dogs. But we continued to march on and finally got some form of civil rights. Quickly after that, though, in the 1980s, the war on drugs started, which was basically just a war on poor black people and led to the extremely disproportionate rate that black people are incarcerated in comparison to every other race. And we still suffer from racial profiling to this very day. Fast forward to the 1990s and the 2000s, and the war on terror started, which was basically just a war on Muslim people. And to this day, Muslims are still racially profiled and humiliated just for believing in God. Finally, fast forward to present day, and I don't even need to tell you what's going on right now because you already know. So when we say make America great again, we need to realize that such a statement implies that we should look back to some shining golden era in our country's history. But if we truly believe that such a statement fits our country, then maybe we need to reassess our definition of greatness. Is greatness a time of financial success and military power when we are the richest, most powerful country in the world? Or is greatness a time when every single citizen truly has liberty and justice and the freedom to live their life in peace? Maybe we shouldn't be trying to make America great again, but rather make America greater than it's ever been. I love you.
Yeah, because let me add a little bit to that also. If you want to make this country great, you know, there would be no poor people living on the street. There would be no sick people. You know, everybody would have something to eat. Everybody would have somewhere to live. And please don't tell me that we can't do that. We can do that. This country, if you looked at a pie chart of this country's budget, half of this country's budget goes to the military. Spend more money on the military than the next 10, 15 countries combined. You know, for what? You know, we could take some of that money. I mean, we could wipe out homelessness. We could wipe out poverty in no time. But the reason why we can't do that, because capitalism, you know, there's no profit and people, you know, the greedy people, you know, they got to hold on to their money as long as they can. And, you know, if everybody's eating and there's got to be something there for them, because capitalism is a bitch. And I think a lot of the problems that we have, it has got to do with capitalism, because, you know, the basic premise of capitalism is I have to make more money than my competition, and I will do whatever it takes to make more money than my competition. So, you know, we keep talking about America is great. I mean, what part of history are we talking about? Nobody can seem to put their finger on it, because nobody knows. Nobody has an idea. It's just one of those things. It's one of these abstract concepts, is that nobody knows what you're talking about. Whenever you say that, it's like, what are you talking about? Nobody knows. So that phrase means nothing. You know, it may mean something that it might have been great, like I said, to some people, but it wasn't great for everybody. Now, clip number two, why America isn't the greatest. You know, this is, and this clip is from, you may have seen it, but I like this clip. This clip was from a TV show that came on a few years ago on HBO, and this clip, to me, pretty much sums up a lot of this so-called argument of, you know, people running around, and we know people like this, and we see them every day, and we talk to them every day. You know, these are the same people that run around and pretend that, you know, we are the greatest country on the planet and have no idea what they're talking about. You know, this is the same, you know, this comes from the same people that are butthurt because you have athletes, football players, kneeling during the national anthem. Talk about this also. You know, I call them super patriots. You know, they're phony patriots. You know, these are the ones, you know, they want to sit there and cry about the flag and the military, which this protest has nothing to do with. It don't seem that they won't bat an eye whenever somebody's shot in the street. You know, they could give a rat's ass about that, but, you know, say something about the national anthem, boy, and they get all bent out of shape. And then the first thing they want to tell you, especially on social media, is, you know, well, if you don't like it, you can leave. You know what I tell them people? Well, come and make me leave. How's that? Just because I have an opinion that's different than yours, you don't like what I'm saying, I should leave. Well, that's the case, you should leave too. You know, if I got to go, you got to go. If everybody came here from somewhere, you know, only people that were here before are the natives. So, you know, if I got to go, then you go. You see, you get a lot of that out of the keyboard warriors. Those are the knuckleheads that always bitching and complaining about something online. And then usually, you know, they say that, and then you tell them, you know, make me leave. All of a sudden, you won't hear a peep out of them. So this is clip number two. Like I said, this is from TV show that used to come on HBO back in the day, but I do like this clip because it does, you know, as far as these people run around acting like this is the greatest country on the planet, it's not. So, you know, that's that. So, let's play this clip number two.
We'll go on to the next question. You, sir.
My name's Steven. I'm a junior, and my question's for Will McAvoy. Do you consider yourself a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent?
I consider myself a New York Jets fan, Steven. Since it's been brought up, you've almost religiously avoided stating or even implying a political allegiance. Is that because, as a news anchor, you feel the integrity of your broadcast would be compromised?
That sounds like a good answer. I'll take it.
There was a short piece on Vanity Fair's website by Marshall Westbrook. You probably saw it, where he calls you the Jay Leno of news anchors. You're popular because you don't bother anyone.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Jealous of the size of Jay's audience.
Are you willing to say here tonight whether you lean right or left?
I voted for candidates run by both major parties.
Let's move on to the next question. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Jenny. I'm a sophomore, and this is for all three of you. Can you say in one sentence or less what... you know what I mean. Can you say why America is the greatest country in the world?
Diversity and opportunity.
Lewis?
Freedom and freedom. So let's keep it that way.
Will?
The New York Jets.
No, I'm going to hold you to an answer on that. What makes America the greatest country in the world?
Well, Lewis and Sharon said it, diversity and opportunity and freedom and freedom.
I'm not letting you go back to the airport without answering the question.
Well, our Constitution is a masterpiece. James Madison was a genius. The Declaration of Independence is, for me, the single greatest piece of American writing. You don't look satisfied.
One's a set of laws and the other's a declaration of war. I want a human moment from you. What about the people? Why is America
not the greatest country in the world, Professor? That's my answer.
You're saying...
Yes.
You're... Let's talk about...
Fine. Sharon, the NEA is a loser. Yeah, it accounts for a penny out of our paycheck, but he gets to hit you with it anytime he wants. It doesn't cost money. It costs votes. It costs airtime and column inches. You know why people don't like liberals? Because they lose. If liberals are so fucking smart, how come they lose so goddamn always?
Hey.
And with a straight face, you're going to tell students that America is so star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom? Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom. So 207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And yeah, you, sorority girl, just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only 3 categories: number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period, generation, period, ever, period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Yosemite? Sure used to be. We stood up for what was right. We fought for moral reasons. We passed laws, struck down laws for moral reasons. We waged wars on poverty, not poor people. We sacrificed. We cared about our neighbors. We put our money where our mouths were, and we never beat our chest. We built great big things, made ungodly technological advances, explored the universe, cured diseases, and we cultivated the world's greatest artists and the world's greatest economy. We reached for the stars, acted like men. We aspired to intelligence. We didn't belittle it. It didn't make us feel inferior. We didn't identify ourselves by who we voted for in the last election, and we didn't scare so easy. We were able to be all these things and do all these things because we were informed by great men, men who were revered. First step in solving any problem is recognizing there is one. America is not the greatest country in the world anymore.
enough.
And another thing that bugs me is that how can we as a country preach to other countries about human rights when we as a country have KKK organizational club membership meeting, whatever you want to call them, organizations, active organizations running around in this country. And the KKK have killed thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. A lot of them, you know, probably never heard of. So when this country gets on this little high horse, you know, talking to other countries about, you know, human rights, I think you should probably want to look in the mirror, because, you know, we're not so great on that end ourselves. You know, but we seem to want to do that every now and again. But, you know, and the reason why the KKK is never going to all the way go away, because too many members are police officers, are doctors, are lawyers, are teachers, are judges, are business owners. Whatever kind of person you can think of, that's what's in the KKK. They're never going to go away until we rat them out. You have to smoke them out. And then usually, you know, it's funny to me that, you know, when somebody brings up the KKK, you know, some asshat has got to bring up, you know, Black Lives Matter. Oh, they're terrorist organizations. And then they got to bring up the Panthers. Oh, they're terrorist organizations. And I tell them, like, I'll tell them until somebody proves to me otherwise. You give me a list of the names of people that members of Black Lives Matter have killed and Black Panthers have killed. And once you give me a list of names that these organizations have killed, then, you know, I'll shut up about it. But until then, you can't come up with a list, and you need to shut the hell up. Because a lot of times the people that are sitting there defending the KKK are probably members themselves. It's like every time you turn around, somebody, you know, they love bringing that up. And I tell them the same thing. And I'm still sitting here waiting on list, you know, because I challenge people on that. You know, they like to bring that up. And I'm still sitting here waiting on that list to show up. And I haven't seen that list yet. You know why I won't see that list? Because that list doesn't exist. I'm still waiting on it. It'll never appear. 914-803-4571. And the chat room is open, and nobody's in it, which I understand. I think tonight's going to be more or less an educational program, because it is a holiday, which I understand, which is all good. But whenever you listen, and this is to my, you know, to my loyal listeners that listen every week, you know, I'm not mad at you. I understand it's a holiday. Get home safely. You can always listen to the program tomorrow in the archive. It's all good. Excuse me, I have something in my throat. The next clip I'm going to play, number three. And this is entitled Trump's 1950s USA, Back When America Was Great. And I think, and a lot of people have said this, that he and his followers want to go back to the 1950s. Because for them, some reason, they seem to think that, you know, that was the greatest point in this country's history. And I've already said why some of them probably think so. You know, you had, the white middle class was thriving. You had segregation, you had Jim Crow, you had all kinds of stuff going on at that point. So a lot of them probably do feel like, you know, because back then you could talk shit to black folk and they wouldn't say nothing to you. Now you try that mess, you talk shit to black folk and they'll punch you right dead in your face. Because we don't play that no more. And they're homesick. You know, a lot of them are mad that they can't run around calling black people nigger no more. And I've already said, you can use that word as much as you like, anytime you like. But just remember, There are consequences using that word, repercussions. If you want to use that word and it's just killing you to use that word, please feel free to use it. But also remember that if you do use it and you get your ass beat, it's on you. It's not on anybody else but you. I'm going to play this clip. This is number three. This is about a 15-minute clip, but it's interesting. That's why I picked it. So take a listen to this. Be right back.
My fellow Georgians, this is Ennie Thompson, candidate for governor. I want to talk with you for a moment about public schools. The recent Supreme Court decision has caused much concern in our state. I want you to know exactly what my position is on this issue. I am for separate schools for the races at all costs. Thank you.
At the center of Mississippi's struggle for power was the black vote. In some counties, blacks outnumbered whites 4-1. In 1962, in many counties, no blacks were registered. This mass political awakening reminded segregationists of the years following the Civil War, a time when blacks had been elected to high political office.
We have had experience in the past with Negro political domination. It was known as the Reconstruction. There are some who call this present attempt to build up political power through the mass registration of unqualified Negro voters the second Reconstruction.
I don't want the Negro as I have known him and contacted him during my lifetime as a class to control the making of a law that controls me, to control the government under which I live.
Would you feel better then if there were some legal means of keeping all Negroes off the rolls?
I'd feel better, and I think this country would be better off if all Negroes were removed from it, because I think it is a potential source of racial strife.
We agree with the president that the commission of the city of Albany should discuss local problems with local Negroes in an effort to reach local solutions. That has been and is now the policy of the city of Albany. But that policy does not embrace outside agitators, including Martin Luther King and his coterie of troublemakers, who jump about the South like so many fleas on a hot griddle and cause racial rashes where none have heretofore existed. It is our policy never to discuss problems or to negotiate with people who have utter contempt for our local ordinances, our state statutes, and restraining orders issued by the federal courts.
The only way we can win this fight is to defeat the enemy, to destroy the enemy before the enemy destroys us.
There is nothing in the United States Constitution to declare that white and colored children must attend the same public schools.
In 1954, the Citizens Council was established in the Delta, the northwest section of the state, where blacks outnumbered whites. The council's purpose, to preserve white political power by opposing integration.
I wish I was in Dixie, AK, and shit wouldn't have been bad in the 60s. No way.
I shall march in this campaign under the flag of states' rights, preservation of our great institutions, traditions, and customs. I shall wage unrelentless war upon those who would destroy our Georgia way of life.
Some attempting to register had even been murdered to stop black political activity.
I'll use axe handles, I'll use guns, I'll use paint, I'll use my fist, I'll use my customers, I'll use my employees, I'll use anything at my disposal. This property belongs to me, my wife, and my children. It doesn't belong to anybody else. I'll throw out a white one, or a black one, or a red-headed one, or a bald-headed one. It doesn't make any difference.
Today it's rather deserted, but it was the scene of a tremendous free-for-all only a few days ago between Negroes and whites.
I think people felt that the Democratic Party would actually embrace them. I think there was a lack of real understanding of the depth to which the local Southern politicians were entwined in the Democratic Party, and that there would be a real reluctance on the part of the National Democratic Party leadership to take in black people at the expense of these Southern politicians.
Medgar Evers had been shot in the back by a single round from a high-powered rifle. The one fingerprint found on the weapon belonged to Byron De La Beckwith, a member of the Citizens Council in Greenwood, Mississippi. Medgar Evers, 37 years old, died 1 hour later.
This is the Citizens Council Forum, the American viewpoint with a Southern accent.
The beach is pumped in with government money, and public taxes maintain it. This leads to the controversy wherein the Negroes feel that they have the same right as anyone else to use the beach.
I don't like it.
Why not?
I don't like a nigger.
I wish they'd kill them all.
I'm sure that you will not fail to enact an appropriate state sovereignty bill, which will enable us during the next 2 years to maintain a successful fight for preserving the separation of the races in this state.
All of his life, but they laid Medgar Evers in his grave.
I didn't think I was being watched. I was being watched. They were there till I went to bed at night.
As in every community in Mississippi, there is segregation of the races. Drinking fountains are segregated. Restrooms are segregated. Just as the pattern of segregation is evident in Forest, so too is the real interest both races have in each other's welfare.
In 1964, the state of Mississippi called it an invasion. Civil rights workers called it Freedom Summer. To change Mississippi and the country, they would risk beatings, arrests, and their lives.
Clean, modern bus station in Jackson, Mississippi. The battle lines are drawn, the defenses complete. The bus station, dwarfed by the downtown skyscrapers of Jackson, is guarded outwardly by the entire police force of the city. There are others around the corner, plainclothes deputies wait. Just out of sight, troops are standing, the hot southern sun glinting on their fixed bayonets. For Jackson, Mississippi, the enemy is at the gates. The hour has come. The invaders are 14 Negro and white passengers on an inbound bus.
The racial integrity of our people is not for sale on the political auction block.
The focal point for much of the tension here in Biloxi centers around the activities of a Dr. Gilbert Mason, a Negro physician who has been trying to lead his people down to the beaches to bathe.
Today, I have stood where once Jefferson Davis stood,
and took an oath to our people. It is very appropriate that from this cradle of the Confederacy, this very heart of the great Anglo-Saxon Southland, that today we sound the drum for freedom, as have our generation of forebears before us done time and again down through history. Let us rise to the call of freedom-loving blood that is in us and send our answer to the tyranny that clanks its chains upon the South.
We must identify the traitors in our midst. We must eliminate the cowards from our front line.
We gotta live for the mayor thing.
It is our privilege to live in a land as great as these United States. The greatness, power, and prestige of our nation has come from within, from our own people.
And you better pray good.
Oh, it's not a train, Mama. It's our new mobile home, and I sleep in the other room. We all have our own rooms this time. Me, you, and Cotton. And Crackers has that nice little shed right out back, so he can have his friends in whenever he likes without waking us up. Isn't it wonderful?
Oh, yeah!
Lee! We've got to help General Lee! Come on! Let's get those damn Yankees!
For years, most blacks in Mississippi had been denied the right to a decent education. SNCC opened 41 freedom schools across the state.
When the civil rights workers invaded the state in the summer of 1964 to change us, presumably into their own image, they were met with a feeling of some curiosity, but mostly resentment. They fanned out across the state, made a great to-do of breaking up our customs.
Nobody imported me down here. I belong here. I belong here in Georgia.
August 7th, 1964, the funeral of James Cheney in Meridian, Mississippi. Never brought anyone to trial for the murder of the three young men. But in federal court, Deputy Cecil Price and six others were found guilty of civil rights violations in connection with the killings and received sentences ranging from 3 to 10 years.
Mr. Sergeant-at-Arms, have you had any contingency plans for this?
None at all. I just stand here peacefully, sign
time to keep this aisle clear.
Mississippi, when they are before the eyes of the world, they are peaceful and loving. And when they get back to Mississippi, nigger, you can't come in here. Nigger, you can't come in there. Nigger, you get out. And here we are in the eyes of the world, seeing the same thing that happens down, way down in the deep south, Mississippi.
The MFDP was never seated at the 1964 convention, but their protest opened up the Democratic Party and changed national politics.
A lot of these clips, and this was one of those clips that had clips, had stuff all over the place. But a lot of this people talking in this clip, this clip took place mostly in the 50s, and it is believed that whenever Trump and the Republicans holler "Make America Great Again," this is time period they're talking about, the 50s, because you know, truthfully, Trump doesn't like minorities. He doesn't like black people. He doesn't like Mexican people. Only time he liked minority people when they were working for him. He don't like Native Americans because he tried to bully some Native Americans out of casinos and it didn't work. So he don't like anybody other than white folks. So when his followers running around talking about "Make America Great Again," the part of the period of American history they're talking about the 50s, even though they won't come out and say it. Excuse me. Because Trump has been sued before by minorities, especially in his family's real estate business. They would discriminate against black people in New York all the time, and he gets sued. Only time he likes minorities is when they're working for him in his hotels housekeepers, you know, and the thing with having black people on his cabinet, well, that's just a front. That is a front, because I guarantee you, if he could have all whites working for him, he would. Ben Carson is a phony. That Omarosa chick, whatever her name is, she's a phony. They're phonies. He's a phony. People that follow Trump are most of them are brain dead, you know. And I know that's probably casting a wide net, but, you know, it is what it is. Clip number four is asking the question, when was America great? And that's a good question, because right now, trying to figure that out, we don't know. It's one of those questions that, you know, probably will never be answered. This is a short clip. Play it. Be right back.
Let's make America great again.
America never stopped being great.
I promise you, our strength, our greatness, does not depend on Donald Trump.
Together, we will make America great again.
Don't let anyone ever tell you that this country isn't great. That somehow we need to make it great again. Because this right now is the greatest country on earth.
Well, 50 years ago.
50s.
When I was a kid, because everything was great.
When President Reagan was in office.
Probably around the 1800s.
After the world, oh my God, I can't talk. Choo!
That's a good question.
That's a hard question.
Well, that's a trick question.
I mean, you mean like great in terms of ecological, like waterfalls and rainbows?
I have a tendency to think that things were better in the old days. On the other hand, as a gay person, things are a lot better now than they were then. So I think that it really depends on what issues you're looking at.
Yeah, when I didn't have no worries, didn't have to listen to the news, didn't really know what was going on, and I just enjoyed my life. That's when America was great for me.
I think it's still great. It's great now. You know, there's always controversy. There's always political fights.
Well, it seems everyone was optimistic after the war. There was more wealth shared among the general population. Seems now that there's very rich and then the very poor. So I think people have lost that hope.
The issues going on right now in the presidential election are just distracting from how good the country is. And it's silly.
Yeah, of course, there's vandals and, you know, pirates and whatnot. But, you know, for the most part, we have good people out here.
Yes, like this is France, but bigger.
Yeah, I don't know if it's ever really been great, but I'm happy. I know there are a lot of unhappy people, but hopefully it can get better.
Yeah, and that's the thing that we're hoping that it does get better one day. Don't know when.
Excuse me.
But I had that one guy talking about Reagan. I mean, that's pretty much when, according to a lot of people, that's pretty much when the middle class started dropping because of the policies that Reagan put into place. Time period that Bush was in office, that was pretty jacked up period in time. President Obama came in. He tried to do the best he could. He didn't get a whole lot of help. Tried. Some people think that was great. Right now, I'm still waiting on to see what this man child in the White House is going to do. He's so busy sending out tweets, he's not even paying attention to the job that he was elected to do. That's a sign. Like I said, I've been up all day, had to go to work, but I'm still doing the show. The last clip I'm going to play, and this may just take us out till next week's show, since this is going to be pretty much a presentation more than a show, because it's holiday. I understand a lot of people are out. A lot of people aren't able to listen like they usually can because it is a holiday. But this clip is the Frederick Douglass speech entitled Meaning of the 4th of July for the Negro. And I think as the years go by, I think especially a lot of, black people, it's starting to get, they're starting to really think about a lot of stuff, research a lot of things and really get into stuff that, people seem to think that are, traditions. But, trying to get to the bottom of a whole lot of things. Like I said, I'm going to play this clip. This clip's entitled Meaning of 4th of July for the Negro by Frederick Douglass. And it'll probably check us out until next week. If I get calls toward the end of the show, I'll grab them. But if not, it's all good. But I do want to play this for you. Because I think this is important to listen to. This is a very important speech. And if you've never heard it before, I'm playing the entire speech. It's about 19-minute speech. I'm playing the entire thing so that you can hear it. All right? Play it. Be right back.
The Meaning of July 4th for the Negro by Frederick Douglass. Fellow citizens, I am not wanting in respect for the fathers of this republic. The signers of the Declaration of Independence were brave men. They were great men, too, great enough to give frame to a great age. It does not often happen to a nation to raise, at one time, such a number of truly great men. The point from which I am compelled to view them is not, certainly, the most favorable, and yet I cannot contemplate their great deeds with less than admiration. They were statesmen, patriots, and heroes, and for the good they did, and the principles they contended for, I will unite with you to honor their memory. Fellow citizens, pardon me, allow me to ask, why am I called upon to speak here today? What have I, or those I represent, to do with your national independence? Are the great principles of political freedom and of natural justice embodied in that Declaration of Independence extended to us? And am I, therefore, called upon to bring our humble offering to the national altar and to confess the benefits and express devout gratitude for the blessings resulting from your independence to us? Would to God, both for your sakes and ours, that an affirmative answer could be truthfully returned to those questions. Then would my task be light, and my burden easy and delightful. For who is there so cold that a nation's sympathy could not warm him? Who so obdurate and dead to the claims of gratitude that would not thankfully acknowledge such priceless benefits? Who so stolid and selfish that would not give his voice to swell the hallelujahs of a nation's jubilee when the chains of servitude had been torn from his limbs? I am not that man. In a case like that, the dumb might eloquently speak, and the lame man leap as an art. But such is not the state of the case. I say it with a sad sense of the disparity between us. I am not included within the pale of glorious anniversary. Your high independence only reveals the immeasurable distance between us. The blessings in which you, this day, rejoice are not enjoyed in common. The rich inheritance of justice, liberty, prosperity, and independence, bequeathed by your fathers, is shared by you, not by me. The sunlight that brought light and healing to you has brought stripes and death to me. This 4th July is yours, not mine. You may rejoice, I must mourn. To drag a man in fetters into the grand illuminated temple of liberty and call upon him to join you in joyous anthems were inhuman mockery and sacrilegious irony. Do you mean, citizens, to mock me by asking me to speak today? If so, there is a parallel to your conduct, and let me warn you that it is dangerous to copy the example of a nation whose crimes, towering up to heaven, were thrown down by the breath of the Almighty, burying that nation in irrevocable ruin. I can today take up the plaintive lament of a peeled and woe-smitten people. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down, yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof, for there they that carried us away captive required of us a song, and they who wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. How can we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. Fellow citizens, above your national tumultuous joy, I hear the mournful wail of millions, whose chains, heavy and grievous yesterday, are today rendered more intolerable by the jubilee shouts that reach them. If I do forget, if I do not faithfully remember those bleeding children of sorrow this day, may my right hand forget her cunning, and may my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth, to forget them, to pass lightly over their wrongs, and to chime in with the popular theme, would be treason most scandalous and shocking, and would make me a reproach before God and the world. My subject, then, fellow citizens, is American slavery. I shall see this day, and its popular characteristics, from the slave's point of view. Standing there, identified with the American bondman, making his wrongs mine, I do not hesitate to declare with all my soul that the character and conduct of this nation never looked blacker to me than on this 4th of July. Whether returned to the declarations of the past or to the professions of the present, the conduct of the nation seems equally hideous and revolting. America is false to the past, false to the present, and solemnly binds herself to be false to the future. Standing with God and the crushed and bleeding slave on this occasion, I will, in the name of humanity, which is outraged, in the name of liberty, which is fettered, in the name of the Constitution and the Bible, which are disregarded and trampled upon, dare to call in question and to denounce, with all the emphasis I can command, everything that serves to perpetuate slavery, the great sin and shame of America. I will not equivocate. I will not excuse. I will use the severest language I can command, and yet not one word shall escape me that any man whose judgment is not blinded by prejudice, or who is not at heart a slaveholder, shall not confess to be right and just. But I fancy I hear someone of my audience say, "It is just in this circumstance that you and your brother abolitionists fail to make a favorable impression on the public mind. Would you argue more and denounce less, would you persuade more and rebuke less, your cause would be much more likely to succeed." But I submit, where all is plain, there is nothing to be argued. What point in the anti-slavery creed would you have me argue? On what branch of the subject do the people of this country need light? Must I undertake to prove that the slave is a man? That point is conceded already. Nobody doubts it. The slaveholders themselves acknowledge it in the enactment of laws for their government. They acknowledge it when they punish disobedience on the part of the slave. There are 72 crimes in the state of Virginia which, if committed by a black man, no matter how ignorant he be, subject him to the punishment of death, while only 2 of the same crimes will subject a white man to the like punishment. What is this but the acknowledgement that the slave is a moral, intellectual, and responsible being? The manhood of the slave is conceded. It is admitted in the fact that Southern statute books are covered with enactments forbidding, under severe fines and penalties, the teaching of the slave to read or to write. When you can point to any such laws in reference to the beasts of the field, then I may consent to argue the manhood of the slave. When the dogs in your streets, when the fowls of the air, when the cattle on your hills, when the fish of the sea, and the reptiles that crawl shall be unable to distinguish the slave from a brute, then will I argue with you that the slave is a man. For the present, it is enough to affirm the equal manhood of the Negro race. Is it not astonishing that, while we are plowing, planting and reaping, using all kinds of mechanical tools, erecting houses, constructing bridges, building ships, working in metals of brass, iron, copper, silver, and gold, that while we are reading, writing, and ciphering, acting as clerks, merchants, and secretaries, having among us lawyers, doctors, ministers, poets, authors, editors, orators, and teachers, that while we are engaged in all manner of enterprises common to other men, digging gold in California, capturing the whale in the Pacific, feeding sheep and cattle on the hillside, living, moving, acting, thinking, planning, living in families as husbands, wives, and children, and above all, confessing and worshiping the Christian's God, and looking hopefully for life and immortality beyond the grave, we are called upon to prove that we are men. Would you have me argue that man is entitled to liberty? That he is the rightful owner of his own body? You have already declared it. Must I argue the wrongfulness of slavery? Is that a question for Republicans? Is it to be settled by the rules of logic and argumentation, as a matter beset with great difficulty, involving a doubtful application of the principle of justice, hard to be understood? How should I look today, in the presence of Americans, dividing and subdividing a discourse, to show that men have a natural right to freedom, speaking of it relatively and positively, negatively and affirmatively? To do so would be to make myself ridiculous, and to offer an insult to your understanding. There is not a man beneath the canopy of heaven that does not know that slavery is wrong for him. What, am I to argue that it is wrong to make men brutes, to rob them of their liberty, to work them without wages, to keep them ignorant of their relations to their fellow men, to beat them with sticks, to flay their flesh with the lash, to load their limbs with irons, to hunt them with dogs, to sell them at auction, to sunder their families, to knock out their teeth, to burn their flesh, to starve them into obedience and submission to their masters. Must I argue that a system thus marked with blood and stained with pollution is wrong? No, I will not. I have better employment for my time and strength than such arguments would imply. What, then, remains to be argued? Is it that slavery is not divine, that God did not establish it, that our doctors of divinity are mistaken? There is blasphemy in the thought. That which is inhuman cannot be divine. Who can reason on such a proposition? They that can may, I cannot. The time for such argument is past. At a time like this, scorching irony, not convincing argument, is needed. Oh, had I the ability and could reach the nation's ear, I would today pour out a fiery stream of biting ridicule, blasting reproach, withering sarcasm, and stern rebuke. For it is not light that is needed, but fire. It is not the gentle shower, but thunder. We need the storm, the whirlwind, and the earthquake. The feeling of the nation must be quickened. The conscience of the nation must be roused. The propriety of the nation must be startled. The hypocrisy of the nation must be exposed. And its crimes against God and man must be proclaimed and denounced. What to the American slave is your 4th of July? I answer, a day that reveals to him, more than all other days in the year, the gross injustice and cruelty to which he is the constant victim. To him your celebration is a sham, your boasted liberty an unholy license, your national greatness swelling vanity, your sounds of rejoicing are empty and heartless, your denunciation of tyrants brass-fronted impudence, your shouts of liberty and equality hollow mockery, your prayers and hymns, your sermons and thanksgivings, with all your religious parade and solemnity, are, to him, mere bombast, fraud, deception, impiety, and hypocrisy, a thin veil to cover up crimes which would disgrace a nation of savages. There is not a nation on the earth guilty of practices more shocking and bloody than are the people of the United States at this very hour. Go where you may, search where you will, roam through all the monarchies and despotisms of the old world, travel through South America, search out every abuse, and when you have found the last, lay your facts by the side of the everyday practices of this nation, and you will say with me that, for revolting barbarity and shameless hypocrisy, America reigns without a rival. Allow me to say, in conclusion, notwithstanding the dark picture I have this day presented of the state of the nation, I do not despair of this country. There are forces in operation which must inevitably work the downfall of slavery. The arm of the Lord is not shortened, and the doom of slavery is certain. I, therefore, leave off where I began, with hope. While drawing encouragement from the Declaration of Independence, the great principles it contains, and the genius of American institutions, my spirit is also cheered by the obvious tendencies of the age. Nations do not now stand in the same relation to each other that they did ages ago. No nation can now shut itself up from the surrounding world and trot round in the same old path of its fathers without interference. The time was when such could be done. Long-established customs of hurtful character could formally fence themselves in and do their evil work with social impunity. Knowledge was then confined and enjoyed by the privileged few, and the multitude walked on in mental darkness. But a change has now come over the affairs of mankind. Walled cities and empires have become unfashionable. The arm of commerce has borne away the gates of the strong city. Intelligence is penetrating the darkest corners of the globe. It makes its pathway over and under the sea, as well as on the earth. Wind, steam, and lightning are its chartered agents. Oceans no longer divide, but link nations together. From Boston to London is now a holiday excursion. space is comparatively annihilated. Thoughts expressed on one side of the Atlantic are distinctly heard on the other. The far-off and almost fabulous Pacific rolls in grandeur at our feet. The celestial empire, the mystery of ages, is being solved. The fiat of the Almighty, let there be light, has not yet spent its force. No abuse, no outrage, whether in taste, sport, or avarice, can now hide itself from the all-pervading light. The iron shoe and crippled foot of China must be seen in contrast with nature. Africa must rise and put on her yet unwoven garment. Ethiopia shall stretch out her hand unto God. In the fervent aspirations of William Lloyd Garrison, I say, and let every heart join in saying it, Godspeed, the year of Jubilee, the wide world over, when from their galling chains set free, the oppressed shall vilely bend the knee, and wear the yoke of tyranny, like brutes no more. That year will come, and freedom's reign, to man his plundered rights again, restore. Godspeed the day when human blood shall cease to flow. In every clime be understood the claims of human brotherhood, and each return for evil, good, not blow for blow. That day will come all feuds to end, and change into a faithful friend each foe. Godspeed the hour, the glorious hour, when none on earth shall exercise a lordly power, nor in a tyrant's presence cower, but to all manhood's stature tower by equal birth. That hour will come, to each, to all, and from his prison house to thrall, go forth. Until that year, day, hour arrive, with head and heart and hand I'll strive to break the rod and rend the gyve, the spoiler of his prey deprive. So witness heaven, and never from my chosen post, whatever the peril or the cost, be driven.
Well, that was Meaning of July 4th for the Negro by Frederick Douglass. And that is going to go ahead, and we're going to close out tonight's show because, like I said, it's a holiday. People are out enjoying it. I did hear some firecrackers going off. So even though this was a holiday, the show must go on, and it went on. And I hope you enjoyed it if you were able to listen to it. If you couldn't listen to it live, you can always listen to it in the archives. So whenever you get a chance, check it out. And I will be back next week with another topic, and I will see you next Tuesday, 8 to 10. Peace out.